Hello, friends. This is your friend Kent C. Dodds, and I'm joined by my friend Amelia Wattenberger. Is that how you say your last name, Amelia?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh, awesome. Normally, I ask before, and then as I was saying your name, I was like, oh, I didn't ask, so hopefully I get this right.
Amelia, it's both a very straightforward name, but then it's long, so you have time to like wonder if you're saying it correctly while you're saying it.
Yeah, exactly. That is precisely how I felt as I was saying it. So Amelia, you're just such an amazing person. I don't know how I didn't know about you until I think it was your Hooks post. And then I looked at some of the stuff that you've done before, and you've just done some really awesome stuff in the design space and data visualizations and stuff. Your website is definitely something to spend some time on. And so, yeah, I'm like, and it's been a pleasure to know you and follow you on Twitter as well, and watch the other things that you've created. So I'm so happy to have you on to chat with you. It's just an honor to have you. I'd love for the audience to get to know you a little bit better. Would you like to spend a minute or two to just talk about yourself, explain some of the things that are important to you, and just tell us who you are?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to be here. So I guess I can start with how I got into tech. So both my parents are actually programmers. And when I went to college, I said, I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want an office job. That sounds really boring. So I was planning to become something like a prison psychologist. So I studied psychology and neuroscience in college. And then after, I moved down to Texas to work in a research lab. And in order to become a psychologist, you usually have to go through some kind of PhD or PsyD program. And so I hung out with enough grad students that I decided that, hey, maybe I don't want to do this. So I guess I taught myself how to code. And it really just came out of going through Code Academy courses, which I think was the main player in the space at that time, or if not the only, and redoing my website enough times that, and then I got a job as a front-end developer at a startup working on some kind of analytics dashboard. And I actually really love working at a startup, and I think it was really important for me to start my career in a startup because you get to try on a lot of different hats and you get to kind of work across the stack in a way that you might not have the ability to in a bigger company. So I was working on things from like the design to data viz design to data viz development to like front end back to like the query layer. So you really just get to sample it all just out of like need, you know, this has to get done. Someone has to do it. So I've been working at startups basically in the analytics space for I think about 8 years now, and it's something I really enjoy. I'm actually starting a new job soon at The Pudding, which is a really awesome, you know, like data journalism company that tries to they have some tagline. Hold on, I'll look it up. It's basically they try to write articles in a way that utilizes data and presents it in a visual manner. So I'm super excited to get more into the data journalism space. It'll definitely be different than product work, but it has the same themes of like data visualization, being creative on the web, and front-end development. And I'll have to learn a lot more about storytelling, journalism, all those kinds of things. So that's something I'm really excited about. But other than that, I guess my main interests are front-end development in like pretty much everything about it. I also really like to do design, and I really enjoy doing both development and design because sometimes I'll get burnt out on one kind of work and then need to do like something more creative or something more logical. So it's really nice to kind of straddle that line and bounce back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you like all of this stuff is not easy. Like design is not easy. Development is not easy. And so when it is just like when you're really burnt out, you having something as a reprieve is really useful.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's amazing that you started out in psychology and you were going to go in, you know, to prison psychology. What led you to that, or what drew you toward that?
I just think people are really interesting. it seemed like a job I would never get bored of. And I don't know, such a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, maybe the job would have been okay, but getting through the with the doctorate program, maybe not so much.
Yeah, it's a long road for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome to hear a little bit about your story getting into all of this. And if people have not, like you listening right now, if you have not gone to Wattenberger.com, definitely go there because there are some really awesome visualizations and interesting, like there. One thing that I was looking at pretty recently was you had this sketch thing and you did like 33 of these daily sketches, which are just really fascinating to look at. What is it about this kind of, you know, abstract design or just kind of like, I haven't seen anything quite like some of these things. What is it about this that draws you or makes you interested in creating this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this sketches thing I was doing a while ago, and I really liked them because I was going to do one a day. And I think I started this 2 or 3 years ago, and there's like currently 33 of them. So I clearly haven't been doing one a day. but it was basically just let's making something visual with code. And this hooks into, I really like the generative art space, which I honestly haven't gotten to dabble with very much, but it's something that I really enjoy at least playing with in my own time. And the sketches are a really nice way to say, hey, I'm going to sit down for 20, 30 minutes and do something, like think of an idea, like, hey, these are circles bouncing around, you know, this rectangle, and then just code that up, figure out the best way to code it up. And then like you have like a very small chunk of work that you can isolate. And doing these sketches has like they seem really silly in the first place, like, oh, one of them is just a bunch of lines. There a lot of them are just circles running around. But these I've actually learned like concepts or ways of doing things through these tiny code examples that I then use at work. So even though they're kind of silly and they don't look useful, they also taught me a lot just running through them.
Yeah, I honestly would say that playing around with things in isolation like that, for me, it teaches me more than, you know, banging my head against a bug in a production application. Not that there isn't value in that as well, but you can learn a lot just by playing with something in isolation and then trying to see how you can apply it to a production application later.
Yeah, there's something about like you don't have to think about anything else. Like you just get to focus on this tiny piece of code that just makes it really easy to focus and like isolate a single concept. And another thing that I really like about these sketches is they kind of force, because they're supposed to be frivolous, they force kind of a playful state of mind when you're doing them, which as a professional programmer, you rarely ever get to have at work. You know, at work, you're focused on this form has to work for every user in every browser, you know, every device width. And like they're very practical. You can't really mess up like goals when you do work at work. So to have something on the side where you can think about programming in kind of a lighthearted, like let's just play around way, I think it's really refreshing and kind of helps with burnout, at least for me. And I think you also learn different skills.
Yeah, I can see that. So when you're making stuff like this, and for the sake of people who are listening, these are like, you kind of described it, but they're, you know, circles or lines just jumping all over the place. Yeah, generative art in motion. And so when you're creating stuff like this, do you find yourself having to use like a bunch of math to figure out like, you know, where the position of all these things? Are you doing a bunch of for loops? Like, what does the code typically look like for you to create this kind of thing?
Yeah, and I will say it's all on GitHub. So if anyone's curious about the actual code for any of these, it's on my Wattenberger-2019 GitHub repo.
I'll put a link to that in the notes. Awesome. So people can find that.
And the code is very messy, and that's intentional.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, right? You don't have to worry about long-term maintenance of these things. And that's one of the refreshing parts
right,
of it.
Right, yeah. Although I will worry when I have to rebuild my site sometime in the future. I've definitely had to brush off my trigonometry knowledge for these things. Like the number of times while building these that I have to say Sokotoa in my head or like look up some kind of trigonometry thing. It's way more than I would have expected to have to do in my adult life.
Yeah, I know when I was doing math in high school and in college, actually in high school, my dad just kind of rolled his eyes at calculus. My dad was a CPA, so like math was really important to him, but algebra, you know, adding up numbers, and he would just look at the, you know, math homework I was doing for calculus and just say like, why would I ever want to know the area under a sine wave? Like that makes no sense to me. Like, why would I ever care about that? But I guess like it does have some application in, you know, in creating interesting user experiences like this.
Yeah. Although by the time you use it, you've mostly forgotten everything anyway.
Yeah.
And I guess the concepts stick with you maybe.
Yeah. I guess if this was your full-time job that you did day in and day out, then maybe it starts to stick. But the cool thing is that we have the internet, we have Google, where you can create stuff like this, even though you don't have a PhD in trigonometry.
Yeah, so. For sure. And one thing that another really nice thing about these sketches is I've started to build up like my own personal collection of utility methods or utility functions for like convert, an XY position to an angle or convert an angle into an XY position, where I can just go grab those. And so those kinds of things really speed up anything in the future if this is a problem I've tackled before. So even as I'm doing the sketches, I'll like put something into a function that I can then just grab in the future.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool. Like, have you ever been able to use one of these things that you create to enhance a user experience on, like, something at work or when you're writing a blog post? Like, your blogs are very unique as well. Do you think that doing sketches like this or like, there are plenty of other things on your website we could talk about, kind of help you to communicate the things that you're trying to teach people better?
Yeah, so probably not what you're getting at, but I've actually used the snake game that I created for a sketch on my company's like public-facing website. I did that
really
recently, which was really fun, but I'm not sure it communicates a lot.
It adds whimsy to the app and improves the user experience, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, oh no, I'm on a 404 page, but I can play snake, so maybe I'm not as angry about it.
That's brilliant. I love that.
So as far as my blog posts go, I guess I'll go through one of like a process that I generally go through with even problems that I need to solve with an interface at work, which might be different from ways that other people might approach a problem like this. So I guess when I start, I'll sit down and I'll say, okay, what am I trying to communicate? What is my main goal here? And I'll try to isolate what I'm trying to accomplish and what I want like readers to learn in 1 to 3 bullet points. So maybe I'll use the CSS cascade post as an example, or maybe the React hooks post as an example. So I wrote an article I titled Thinking in React Hooks. And this is just because I was using hooks at work and I had just, I'd started using them, I don't know, a month previous. And when you first start using hooks, it's a lot like, okay, what is the syntax? What are the different hooks? You know, how does what I'm doing now compare to the syntax that you want me to use in the future? And I had noticed myself kind of having a mindset shift from, okay, this is how it relates to what I was doing in the past. It's just you use this new syntax to like, I was using hooks in a different way that I got to code in a different way. So to be more specific, class components have lifecycle events. So they have component did mount. So I want a function to run when a component mounts. Whereas with hooks, you could use something like use effect and then have an empty dependency array. And my mindset shift was more of, instead of saying this should happen when the component mounts or when this prop changes, you should think of, I want this value to stay in sync with this other value. So mm-hmm. I don't care if it's when a prop changes or when the component mounts. You can use like a use memo hook that runs anytime data changes or the component mounts. So say I want to store like some parsed data array. I just want to keep the parsed data array in sync with the data array. So I don't mm-hmm. need to think about like, do this on mount, do this when this updates, yada, yada. So that was kind of what I was trying to get across with this article. So I guess when I first sat down, I said, okay, this is my main thing I want to communicate. So that was step one. And then step two is thinking, who am I communicating with? Like, who is going to be reading this? So what context will they be in? Are they reading this on the phone or on the go, or are they sitting down on their desk? So with a blog post, you can't really isolate one context. You know, someone could be on the go or they could be at their desk. But if you can, then that will help direct what the final product should look like. And so just questions like, what does the reader already know? So if someone's reading this post, do they already know what hooks are? Do they already know what class components are? Do they know what React is? Like, where do we have to start when we're writing this article? So that's usually my second step, is figuring out, like, where are we starting? What's the context for someone who will be interacting with what I create? And then also knowing, like, what is the reader want to get away from this article? So their goal might be different than my main goal.
Yeah.
And then this isn't like a formal process, but I've tried to formalize it. I guess then I'll just go and say, okay, what tools am I working with? So really knowing your tools is really important to me, because otherwise you're kind of just floundering around and you don't feel like you really have control over what you're building. So focusing on what is the goal and who is the user. I like to just sit down with a sketch pad and just sketch like whatever comes to my mind. And for me, I need to do this like with my sketches with a very open mind, because it's very easy for my own critical inner voice to come out and say, oh, that's a stupid idea. And then I don't even like draw it. Often things that might seem silly in the beginning will end up interesting if you kind of like iterate on them a few times. So I actually don't sketch as much as I would like to, but when I have sketched out ideas in the past, it's definitely led to a better final product than when I kind of go straight into implementation.
My wife and I recently changed the bedroom setup for our kids. You know, we had some kids sharing and then we moved them around and stuff. And in the process, she wanted to kind of change what pictures are on the walls and things like that. And my wife And neither my wife nor I are designers, interior or otherwise. And we actually struggle pretty hard making something look good. We know what looks bad, but we can't create good designs. So my wife decided to just like write down some of or draw some of the ideas that she had for the bedrooms, and it made an enormous difference. And so now, like, I wouldn't say that it's, you know, going to win any awards or anything, but we look at the end result after she drew it, and then we implemented what she drew, and we're way happier with it. So at least I can relate to that through my wife, that experience of actually drawing what you want to create first. And I guess a drawing is a lot cheaper to create and scrap than implementation. So that makes a lot of sense that way, too.
Yeah, that's smart. I should do that. I've been trying to learn interior design recently, and it's so hard just to like wrap your mind around these new concepts.
So is that I can see evidence of that process in this Thinking in React Hooks blog post, and I can kind of visualize some of the things that you drew and maybe thought, oh, that's maybe not a good idea, and iterated on things a bit. It is. Like this blog, when I first saw it, it was so good. Like it communicates, and it's still like it's even gotten better since the first time I saw it. But it does such an amazing job of communicating the things that I think are really important to communicate with people. As a teacher myself, I've struggled to make sure that people understand the differences between use effect and these life cycle methods. And just as you said, like, it's not just about, you know, thinking about life cycle methods and like these two things don't directly correlate. And so just the way that you present this, you know, even some things that are in one component did mount may end up in different hooks and that kind of thing, or in no hooks at all. It's just so good. So I think, I can see that there are some areas, like, let's just take a specific example that I just love. Right here, like right at the beginning, you show, here's the class version, here's the hook version. You have these really cool lines that show you where the code would typically go. And then here you say, great, at this point, you might be thinking, got it. So use effect is just a new, is a new way to hook into lifecycle effect. Events. And then as I scroll, this is so cool. As I scroll, it has like this squiggly line that goes through that. And it says, but that's the wrong way to look at it. Now, if I were writing a blog post and I wanted to communicate this idea, what I would do is I might have this text in bold. Like I might say, use effect is not the way to hook into lifecycle events or something. And I just put it in bold and I continue with my blog post. But the way that you have it does such a good job of communicating that to people in a way that calls it out in, you know, like, here's something that people just get wrong really easily. It's really easy to get wrong. So many people get this wrong. So I'm going to give it some extra attention to make sure that people don't miss this. Like, this is really important. Like, where in the world did you get that idea? And like, how to call this out? Like, is it just because you're intentional and you're like, this is the thing I want to make sure people understand? Like you mentioned that, you know, what are people expecting to learn from this article versus what are my goals to teach them? And like, those things may not align. So I'm going to focus some intent on how to communicate this, or like, where does this really come from for you?
Yeah. That's a good question. Part of it is actually, I just don't like writing. Like, while I'm writing something, my brain will be off thinking of like, oh, what's a way I can procrastinate writing this? Like, nice. Wouldn't it be cool if we did this other thing that will take an hour to implement? And then I'll just go do that. But I guess another part of it for that specifically, I guess I've hung out with academics enough that I naturally stay away from things that are a little bit flashy or that seem a little bit gratuitous. So like something like this, it doesn't initially look very useful. Like, oh, you spent all this time on making this like scribbly animation as opposed to writing the article. but I always try to fight back against that instinct. Because like when I always appreciate when I'm reading something and there's something kind of new and exciting, to kind of like draw my attention. And also like,
yeah, it engages you.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is kind of like one of the main points of the article. So I was also thinking, people remember things better when they're a little bit novel or a little bit flashy. So I was trying to emphasize like what some way for me to say like, no, I'll like trick them into agreeing with me and then admonish them and make them feel bad about agreeing with me with like something that moves on scroll. And I guess this also ties into like something I think about a lot is I feel like we kind of just ported newspapers into web format. So a lot of the internet was initially intended for documents. So it makes sense and it's really useful and I really appreciate this, but I feel like we just put newspapers online and we were like, all right, we're going to call it quits. This is great. We can spread information everywhere.
Yeah, just a static experience.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also great because it works with the web's grain, where like if there's text, it'll look good on a phone, it'll look good on the desktop. It's really easy to make good text on the web. But I also feel like the web is like browsers now are so powerful. And I feel like most sites just don't do anything with all of that power, right? Like, I feel like we're just like, all right, I'm going to make a blog post. I'm going to teach something. Let me just write up everything I think about it and then have the reader read it. And when I write a blog post, I like to think about what are ways that I can use or abuse the web technology that we have now to make this stick a little better or be a little bit more entertaining when someone's reading it. I guess the first blog post I wrote, it involves a really long file of code that you kind of build up over the article. And so what a lot of blogs will do or articles will do is they'll have like little code blocks in line, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to follow along with that. But it can be a little bit hard to know, okay, here's a block of text. How does that tie into what I just wrote? Or like, where in the file does this go? Or what file am I in? So just thinking through that, I ended up with a sticky like code sample on the right that as you scroll kind of changes and highlights the different lines that are changing. And so just thinking through like, what is a different way? What are the problems with our current approach? And what are ways that we can try to solve those? I'm not saying it's the best example. And it's also kind of slow and it's going to be a pain in the butt to maintain. But it was kind of like a thought of like, oh, maybe we can do it this way. Let's see how this works.
So I just pulled it up and like, it's fantastic. It's awesome. Because I definitely have read those blog posts where, you know, it's a pretty big block of code and they'll just show you little snippets. And then sometimes it's in multiple files or something. And so they say, go to this GitHub repo to see it all together. But by putting it right there in line, it's almost like you've turned this blog post into a video. Like it's just one short step away from a video. Not to say that videos are superior to blog posts. What's cool about this is that it's really easy for you to keep up to date and you don't have to like re-record it or anything. And it's easy for people to scroll up and scroll down. And so it's a different medium entirely, but it has so many of the benefits of a video without many of the drawbacks. And that's just fascinating. It's really, I think that it does a really good job of communicating what you're trying to communicate. Which accomplishes the goal here. So, I think we're kind of coming down on our time here. But what do you think is the change that you want to see in our world? Like, are you hoping that we can utilize this web technology more to do more whimsical things? Or are you hoping for just more, you know, better learning? Or is it better user experiences? What are you really hoping to get out of this type of like thought process around design?
Yeah, I guess part of it is that I want the old web back. Like, remember mm-hmm. when GeoCities was around and everything was a little bit crazy and we had like maybe a 20th of the technology that we have today. You know, there was like marketing and text and that was about it. So I selfishly want that. And I want to see more examples of people like using the web to kind of push us forward to say like, hey, let's use this technology and think of new ways to communicate. That's something that I would love to see more of on the web.
Yeah. And, you know, a technology that comes to my mind is my blog uses MDX and that allows me to, I don't utilize this as well as I should. And now I'm feeling inspired and I feel like I should do more of this, but it does allow me to have my content in a markdown file that it's really easy to type in and keep updated rather than trying to put that in some JSX and that kind of thing. But it also allows me to throw in JSX in there so I can have these interactive things. And sometimes I'll put like a little form as like a demo of something in there, but I think I should do something more. The web can do more than what I'm doing with it. So I'm inspired.
Yeah, I want to see what you come up with.
Yeah, I'll come up with something good. But I think that we can improve the experience of our users or of our learners or whatever it is by doing, you know, some more intentional type of communication through the technologies that we have. And your blog is an excellent example. And as a mini homework for everybody, I want you like people to go see your blog and look at some of those posts because they're very, very cool. But the homework that Amelia and I decided before we started for you, listener, is do something unconventional. So whether you are a video, like screencaster, live streamer, or blogger, or you know, individual contributor on a big project or something, think of something that you can do to enhance the user experience by stepping outside of the regular mold for, you know, building whatever experience you're thinking about building and hopefully accomplishing your goals and the user's goals a little bit better. So do you have anything to add there, Amelia?
Yeah, and share it with us because I really want to see what people come up with.
Excellent. Yeah, love it. Cool. Amelia, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I am at Wattenberger, my last name, pretty much everywhere except for Instagram, where someone who doesn't even have the last name Wattenberger stole my handle, but I am not bitter. The best way is probably Twitter. So at Wattenberger on Twitter.
Awesome. And we'll have a link in the notes. Cool. Thanks, Amelia. I'm super stoked to try something out now. I'll let you know when I've got something. Thanks everybody for listening. And we will be back with you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.